Chapter 1, South Island, New Zealand. Maiatita's old eyes had more wrinkles than a newly hatched kea chick. She could still see well enough to know that Turag had landed nearby.
"Queer!"
he clucked to tell her it was him. She shrilled back, irritated that he considered her so feeble as to not know that no one flew with the force he did, that no other kea was as large as he was. He hopped to her between the sun-bathed rock and the drift of snow near her ancient nest home. She dug her beak into the snow and flicked some powder at him to let him know she didn't hold a grudge. As the oldest kea in the clan and on the island, she was both proud of her advanced age and the respect the younger one showed her, but also shamed. She could no longer join the others in teaching the yearlings to forage. The last time she tried to fly over the mountains, she almost cleared the peak when coughing overtook her and she had to turn back. Flying down to the coastal feeding patches was no easier. She could ride wind currents down, and on a sunny day she could take advantage of rising currents to return to her territory. But if clouds floated in to dress Mother Sun in grieving clothes, or if the clouds cried enough to wet her feathers, she didn't have the strength to flap fast enough to gain altitude. So she spent most of her days near her nest. Alone, often, she basked in the embrace of her sky-parent Mother Sun, warming her dull feathers, her mourning clothes. So great was her age that she had witnessed the great killing. Thinking back so many Mother Sun turnings ago, a peep escaped her like some needy chick, she thought with shame. Turag hopped closer and laid a coprosma berry beside her. Though young, he knew the kea traditions. "Tell me, grandmother, where you hurt today? Is it your leg?" he asked as he lowered his head in submission and perhaps to receive her soothing beak scratching. He saw how grandmother held her right leg out over the snow, and he knew it had been years since it could support her weight. He shoveled more snow under her leg to prop it up, and he pulled moss from a rock to cushion her leg.
"No, grandson, Mother's sun shines on me today. My leg is warmed and soothed by her, as is my heart with your visit."
"But why did you cry out? Tell me, grandmother."
"You would hear a story from me? Aren't you gathering the clan to guide them to the summer foraging grounds?"
"Not yet. We're still celebrating the summer's longest day."
"Ah, you young ones breed later than we did. It must be the warming windstorms that come so frequently now,"
she mused. "Perhaps, grandmother..." No, you don't want that?
No. That's why I'm sorry I didn't have it in bold.
"You young ones breed later than we did. It must be the warming windstorms that come so frequently now."
"Perhaps, grandmother. But I came not to talk to you of nests and eggs, but to seek your wisdom."
"There's nothing more important than nests and eggs. Our strength comes from our nest homes, and our eggs are their future. I spend my last days here at my old nest home, gathering memories to pass on to the clan. Every egg has inherent worth and beauty, and none is lost without grief. We have lost so many eggs and so many bright yearlings. But maybe this will all change. I've heard great news. Is it true that your Jumpra has given the flock 3 chicks that will fledge soon?"
"Yes, we have a nest home full of strong and energetic chicks. I love them all so, but I don't know if love is enough."
"What troubles you?"
"No, you first, grandmother. The clan's business can wait. The flights will be made clearer if you tell of the great killing."
"You want to know of how we save ourselves from being destroyed, don't you? We didn't save ourselves. It was the non-winged ones who caused the abyssite, and they're also the ones who saved us. I've told this story before. The light of the waxing and waning night sky parent, big snowball, every winter's shortest day for the last 20 years. Why do you wish to hear of darkness in this time of light?
Because times are changing. Our people are changing. Maybe like they did in olden times.
You say olden, but if you go back even further, they were the golden times. Before the non-winged ones set one stupid foot upon this land. Imagine trying to walk on feet that can't grip anything. Instead, they had second feet where their wings should be, but these chest feet were as agile as their minds. Where once we roamed all over this island and played in the waves, riding on sea creatures' shells in the white surge, the non-winged ones tore up our feeding and breeding grounds for their dead tree homes and the strange hard-foot ones that accompanied them. This was before I hatched. By the time I could fly, the only places for us were up in the highest reaches of the ridges because everything below had been turned into feeding grounds for their animals. They took what was ours, so it was theirs. Where there had never been hunger, there was hunger. And that's when the killing began. And the long winter nights in our gathering roost. Some of the old ones said it was our own fault this calamity came upon us, for we had started the killing first. How could that be when the land was ours and our neighbors? Even before the non-wongs set one stupid foot on the reaches of each clan, how could we refuse to feast upon the deceased hard feet, those white four-leggeds who ate our grass, our flowers, whose sweet bodies were abandoned by their own clans. First, we went to see why the Hartford was so still, and then we wondered why the family had left them. We saw the non-winged didn't value the Hartford because they didn't move to the past ones or bury them or set them in the trees so their spirits could soar upon every mother's son's rising. We poked and prodded at the white ones whose feathers were curly and tough and thick, trying to figure out what manner of being they were. And buried under their thick, curly feathers was skin like ours, and under the skin, food of such bounty. We ate them, and they sustained us, especially in the long winters far from our ancestral feeding grounds. Our numbers grew. And sometimes, but not too often, a single kia or clan would ride on the backs of these white ones like they did once in the sea, enjoying the wild, erratic run. Others would poke and prod while they rode, nipping deeper and deeper until the living food was discovered and a nibble had led to consumption and life came from life. I will not deny that some hard feet died. But why? Why were the non-wingeds' hatred and vengeance so great? So immense was their fury to lose a few of their seemingly unworthy family that the snows ran red with our blood. For every Hardfoot that died, thousands of our kin were shot, dropped, stolen, and their severed beaks hung from trees. Their bodies heard no keening from the clan. We became lonely, scattered, and terrified. Until one day, the Nonwinga turned from their ways and stayed her hand. She allowed the occasional sheep, she called them, to feed our hunger, and she convinced other Nonwingas to end the slaughter. That was many years ago, and when I could fly over not just one, but two mountain ridges in a day. Sometimes the killings persisted, but it was more an aberration than celebrated tradition for these Kias. I think we may even call some non-winged or non-feathered friends. It's hard for me, because my entire clan was murdered, as was my first mate-to-be. We had not paired off and left our yearling's flock, but we knew in the depths of our hollow bones that our love was clear and as full as the mountain air.
She tried to cover her chick's call by shifting her weight and raising her wings.
The red on our underwing feathers is a permanent sign of blood spilled and lives lost. The badge. How curious, Kias, carry to remember that life is tragic and a yearling's frolic, blood and beauty.
Lifting his wings in ritual thanks for the sacred telling, her grandson opened his beak and gave the blood and beauty call, Kriya! Before bowing his head in silence. He sighed as Mayatita reached out and preened his head, which he returned in kind. She returned from her grief and into the now.
So, what is troubling you, dear grandson?
He stared off and said, Thank you for the looking back. It helps us in this time of looking forward, because the killing has begun again.